Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buchanani. Chris from Parts Unknown traveling today, huh?
Yeah, I'm in the path of totality for the eclipse, Jim. Although by the time people are listening to this, maybe it's already happened.
But that's pretty exciting for you. And not just, you're not going to be like one of us with the shoebox, right?
No, sir. I'm out at the University of Toledo. Shouts to former Nittany Lions Jaden Dotton and Judge Culpepper, who had a really good season with the Rockets this past fall. So, yeah, I'm going to actually get to look at it through a solar telescope. It's going to be pretty cool.
That is very cool. Well, have fun with that. Let's get started. I want to talk to you mostly today about this quote-unquote Super League that we heard about from The Athletic, but we'll get to that in a moment. First news item I have is Matt Zollers, very, very highly regarded quarterback out of Royersford, which is outside of Philadelphia. And Penn State, obviously, very much after him in the class of 25. They were up against Georgia. Apparently, Alabama got into the battle. Missouri was in the fight. And he ends up at Missouri. Now, I know Pitt was also there. I guess that was his brother plays there.
Yeah, Hardy Har-Har.
Yeah, I dismiss them, and I know...
As you should.
Alabama, I think, came along lately, but it's still Alabama. If you heard this, Penn State, a home state kid, Georgia, Alabama, and Missouri in the fight, Missouri would be the last school that I would think of the four where he would be going, Chris. What does it tell you that he ends up at Missouri?
When I saw his final four, and I knew that Georgia had been in on him hot and heavy for quite a while, I assumed that they were the leaders in the clubhouse. You know, I mean, right? Matt Zollers, Eric Zier, the Z connection manager, was written in the stars. And so when he made his announcement, the first anything I saw about it was on X, and all it said was in-state product commits to SEC school. And I thought, well, there it is. It's Georgia. And I clicked on the article and I had to do a double take. I was like, wait, what? Mizzou? All I can say, Jim, is that whichever NIL collective is down there and work that deal out with him, I hope they did one of those balloon payments or whatever these other new techniques the collectives are doing to keep the guy in school, because I am healthily skeptical that Matt Zollers is going to complete his entire career as a Missouri Tiger.
Well, first of all, that's a pretty safe bet. Just overall, when you talk about a quarterback entering any school
or any recruit, this is the thing. Like, I mean, maybe a decade ago, I'd be losing my mind about losing the number one quarterback recruit, number one recruit in state to an SEC school and not even a top tier one. But these days, with the insanity of the transfer portal, I think it's deflated the high school recruiting balloon quite a bit. These recruiting battles just don't feel like they have the same weight attached to them. And for proof positive of that, you need look no further than this year's roster, which includes Nolan Rucci and Julian Fleming. Like, you're never really out of it. And in many ways, you can be laying the groundwork for the pitch you're going to make for the kid in the transfer portal a few years hence.
That's a great point. And it used to be when the recruit went out of the area, that was the part that said, all right, is he going to keep his commitment, first of all? It's the same way when Penn State brings in a recruit from Arizona, especially if it's an early commitment, you say, well, let me wait for a year. Let me wait for the December commitment date before I get excited about this. When they're not local, I'll go back to Justin Fields out of Georgia. You know, I don't think anyone was surprised after committing to Penn State that he didn't stick with that commitment.
Sure.
And as you said, now with the free agency, you look at it the same way. Now, the question I have for you, though, also is this, in going to Missouri, we've been hearing, remember Nick Saban told us that parity is lost now because of NIL, which I won't get into again, a rant about how hypocritical he is making a statement like that. But does this actually hit a little bit of the opposite argument? Was there ever a time for the last however long that if you had a battle for a very highly regarded recruit, especially at quarterback, and you had Alabama going after him, and you had Georgia going after him, and Penn State as the home state team, would you ever think that Missouri would have a chance? Now, in the age of NIL, they decided this is apparently, it appears that they put their eggs in this basket, Chris, and I think it says, hey, maybe this age of NIL does offer us a little more parity.
I think that's right. And whatever you want about the current model of NIL plus transfer portal, and there are some problems with it, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, when we get into the Super League concept. But I felt, and I think I remember saying this a couple months ago here on this show, that it was no coincidence that we've now had a few years of that system to work. And the fact that we finally started to see some turnover in the schools that were making the 4-team playoff. Like, that model went extinct just in time for a Big Ten team to win it all and to defeat a Pac-12 team, which had been virtually unthinkable during the prior era where the SEC had a functional stranglehold on the sport. No, I think in general in sports, I believe parity is good. And I do think increased parity, or to some degree, has been the result of NIL in the portal.
All right, let's look at this from a Penn State perspective, though. Mm-hmm. Obviously, as a Penn State fan, we would like this highly regarded player to come to Penn State. The fact that he's a Pennsylvania kid, it makes it hurt a little bit more. I've had some people say, oh, what difference does it make where the player comes from? I think it does make a bit of difference, going back to what we were talking about before. If it's a local kid, I think they're a little more likely to stick around than if you're bringing in someone from outside, because you always have the local team still reaching out for them. But how
do you... There's proximity to home. There's the fact that it does maybe mean a little bit more if you grew up hearing Penn State and being around Penn State alumni, friends and family. Yeah, I think that's correct. And the other point that needs to be made is that every team in college football that wants to be successful has to make hay in its natural recruiting footprint, its geographic recruiting footprint. And there's no secret. You can look it up online. The number of blue chip recruits and top tier high school talent that comes out of Pennsylvania is a much smaller pool than some of the Sunshine States that have programs we're competing against. And so Penn State needs to be competitive, and just in a general sense. I'm not going to make or break it on any one recruit or even any one recruiting cycle, but Penn State needs to be disproportionately competitive and successful inside Pennsylvania just for that reason. We've just got a smaller pool of top tier kids, and we've got to keep a good number of them coming to Happy Valley.
Does it matter that Ethan Grunkmeyer is 1 year ahead of Zollers and is apparently very highly regarded, Chris? Mm-hmm. Is this one of those situations where, yes, if you're Ohio State, if you're Georgia, if you're Alabama, you just stack those kind of recruits. You get two of them every year at the one position of quarterback. Where at Penn State, you know what? We can't seem to stack those year after year, and you just need to live with that.
Well, I'm not even sure you get that much benefit from stacking them. Look, Ohio State and Georgia aren't keeping those kids in the building either. I this is why I just don't get bent out of shape about losing a quarterback recruit for a number of reasons. Like, number one, the recruiting services miss on these top-tier quarterbacks all the time. Like, people talk about, oh, Christian Hackenberg was, you know, maybe something of a disappointment. And look, there were a lot of mitigating factors around his career at Penn State. And thank God he kept his commitment to come here. But if you go back and you look at the top 10 quarterbacks from Christian Hackenberg's class, he was by far the most successful player in that group. So they miss all the time. I feel like now, you know, with the development that goes on pre and during high school, there are more and better quarterbacks coming out in every recruiting class now than there ever have been. And you can only one of them gets the ball. Like, you got to go out and try to get one every single year. But to your point, if we want to believe we're good at identifying talent at Penn State, and there are plenty of indicators to suggest that we are, then if we hit on Grunkmeyer, who cares about whether or not we have Zoller, right? I mean, it's just like, of course you would love to keep the talent in state, and it's better to have a top quarterback in the fold than not. But this is just one of these things, even totally irrespective of the effect the portal has had on it. I just can't get too worked up about it. I really think it hurts a little bit, but you pick yourself up and you move on. There's going to be another hot quarterback in the 2026 class and every class after that.
Well, you make the excellent point. And Penn State under James Franklin has been very good at identifying quarterbacks. And we seem to be getting this situation where they identify the quarterback before the quarterback blows up in the recruiting. And you could go all the way back to Justin Fields when Penn State was on him before everybody else was. Penn State was on Drew Aller before everybody else was. I mean, he probably was locked into Penn State before Ohio State even offered him. And he's from the state of Ohio. Same issue with Ethan Grunkmeyer. Now, are we going to find out that Beckham Kritza, you know, from Colorado and now from Florida, he's changing schools, which is also amazing to me at the high school level, might turn out to be, you know, highly regarded when all is said and done. So I'm with you, Chris. You can only play one quarterback at a time. And if all goes well, you actually have the next several years locked in. Drew Aller, Bo Prabula, Ethan Grunkmeyer, it seems to be set up already for several years.
And there's always, like I said, there's always going to be some hot new recruit. Now, this is easy to say after you missed out on the kid, but I truly believe had we gotten his commitment, I'd be talking today about how I thought the most important thing was keeping the number one in-state recruit in Pennsylvania, less about, oh, we got this great quarterback, because who knows?
All right, Chris, that's it for quarter number one. When we come back, as promised, we're going to talk about the Super League. Stay tuned for that. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris Buccanani. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. Chris, just a reminder before we get started here, Friday night, night before the blue-white game eve, our buddy Landon Tangwall is going to be making an appearance with a couple of his friends from the football team at Campus Steaks downtown from 7 to 9 p.m. That's right on Pugh Street there. Great place. I got to go there last week, had lunch. For a guy who spent many years in Philadelphia, Chris, they do it correctly. All right. Mm-hmm. They do it correctly. I know you're familiar with Philadelphia and cheesesteaks there. They do it very well. Check it out. Landon and Friends, Friday night, 7 to 9 p.m., Campus Steaks, 119 South Pugh Street. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm hoping to get there for it, Chris. I'm not sure if I'll be in town yet or not. If I am, I'll be there also. All right. as promised, it's time to talk about the Super League, Chris. Now, before we even get started, I think it's important to point out you and I both agree that, especially coming from this group, this group is not going to take over college football, and this plan isn't just going to be in place. But it is worthy of discussion because of who the group is. They are an influential group. I don't think college football will just say, hey, let's go let them take charge and be the guys. Now, this group is called College Sports Tomorrow. And again, we'll talk about why it's not going to be the people taking over the game. But let's talk about their plan a bit, Chris, and who the people are. Let's start with that. What really struck me is in this group, they have college presidents. They have an NFL executive, maybe second in command of, in the NFL commissioner's office. Mm-hmm. And they even have a guy from a place called Turnkey ZRG. They are the search firm that apparently placed most of the conference commissioners in college football. So these are a pretty heavy, heavyweight people involved with this, Chris. First of all, the members of this group, what does that tell you?
Well, I'm not sure if my estimation of the composition of this group quite matches yours, Jim, because certainly the two heaviest hitters you mentioned are the latter two names, and I am skeptical that they are doing this out of the goodness of their hearts or for love of the game, all right? Certainly, it ticks my eyebrows up, especially when you talk about involvement from a guy who's an NFL executive. Now, the league has sworn off any official involvement. They're saying he's just doing this in his capacity as an individual, not as an NFL executive. But, you know, I have tremendous, tremendous respect for the business acumen and model of the NFL. But I am pretty sure his imprimatur was bought. Okay. And so then when we turn around and we start to scrutinize, well, what university presidents and what programs are represented here? And as I was reading about it in The Athletic, I thought this is kind of like if, you know, like Burger King and Hardee's and Long John Silver's got together and presented a plan that said, we're really concerned about the future of the fast food industry, and we've come up with this solution that allows McDonald's and Taco Bell to continue serving their food, but to share some of the revenue with other important traditional brands in the fast food space. So, like, to me, it does kind of smack of, if not desperation, like there is a definite whiff of the survival imperative here from the likes of West Virginia and Syracuse and some of the other players in this drama.
Well, that is the next important point. They didn't list everyone who was part of this group, but they quoted a couple college presidents. And it was significant that those two college presidents that were quoted were from Syracuse and West Virginia. Now, Chris, in this whole discussion about where we're going to end up in college football, what do those two schools have in common?
Yeah, they're not in the Big Ten or the SEC. And the article goes on to explicitly state that both of those conferences have essentially disavowed any involvement with this plan. And, you know, so anyone whose college football program has already objectively been shown to have been of value via the market was conspicuously absent from this group. So it's fun to talk about their idea. But again, the caveat is that there is no way this is going to happen. And it's coming from people who have a vested interest in hoping and dreaming that it could, because the hard reality of the situation seems to be barreling towards a conclusion where they're virtually shut out of the process.
In the end, this is going to be about money and television money. And can there be more television money doing it this way? Before we get to that aspect, let's go into some of the details of their plan, because it is kind of an interesting plan, and I think it's at least worthy of looking at it. Their plan would be to create a league that would look more like the NFL, and we've been talking about this at least for a couple years, Chris, that it would eliminate essentially the NCAA, And instead of having this super division of football, a lot of people discuss, which would have been like 30 teams or 40 teams, which I always felt in the end would not happen, partially because, again, we talked about this, like the top 25, you know, that we have, all of a sudden, you could be one of the top 25 teams in the country. And if this is a 32-team Super League and you're 25th, you're not very good, Chris. You're not towards the top. You're towards the bottom, right?
Sure.
And it's been my belief that these top teams, they need – you were the first one to use the reference. They need some Washington Generals to beat up on to make it work. So the way they were going to do this, they were going to include all the teams that would have from the old Power Five and the independents. That would be 70 teams. They would split up into 10-team divisions. They would have an eighth division that would consist of that second tier of teams, but there's 60 additional teams. There would be a relegation going on. The top 10 of the rest would be in this division, and those other teams would have an opportunity to work themselves up into that 10-team division, eighth division. Then for playoffs, eight division winners, eight wild cards, and that's how it would work. The playoffs, there wouldn't be a committee. It would be tiebreakers with records, and you play everybody in your division. You do some crossover divisions. Let's just talk about that part of it, Chris. Do you like it? 8-10-team divisions?
Yeah, for what it is, I do, actually. I mean, again, I think that starts to feel a little unwieldy when you're talking about one massive league. But in practice, is it really any that much different from what we have with the various conferences, especially as the conferences split into divisions? Not really. I also, again, just from a pure interest and entertainment perspective, I like this idea of letting the so-called group of five schools get into competition to get up and play with the big boys, and you have an elevation and relegation system. I think that could add some intrigue to the sport. So I do like that. I like that the traditional powers are protected. I like that Washington State and Oregon State have a home again in major college football. There are definite things to like about it, again, just in a vacuum, for sure.
Yes, and it is in a vacuum, but what we would be back to is regional rivalries. And you got to say to yourself, is it really good that Cal and Stanford are playing in the ACC, Chris?
No, it's ridiculous, obviously. And I don't know, commercially speaking, I don't know that it would be the greatest thing in the world for Penn State to be back playing the likes of Syracuse and Pitt and West Virginia every year. But personally, as an old timer, I could enjoy some aspects of that. It would be cool to see some of those rivalries rekindled. Again, I don't know that it would be in the best interests of Penn State. And in that equation, there's really only one opinion that matters, and it belongs to the one school that it's probably not in the best interests of, which again goes back to all the flaws here. But again, just if I'm looking at it as generic college football fan who cares not a whit for media contracts or revenue projections or anything else, I could look at this and say, yeah, over time, this could be pretty interesting and I could get down on it.
Well, you talked about the media interest, but let's just talk about it from the football standpoint and the scheduling standpoint. Would there be an advantage of having all of these teams under one umbrella when it does come time for scheduling, so that we could have college football through the weekend, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, games at every time, noon, 3 o'clock games, 7 o'clock games, 10 o'clock games, and we can get our fill of college football. The other part to this is I'm assuming there would be the crossover games. Now, what makes, for me right now, the Big Ten with the USC and UCLA interesting is Penn State when was the last time Penn State played UCLA? UCLA is not necessarily a top-tier program right now, but I would say there's a lot more Penn State fan interest in seeing UCLA this year than there is Minnesota or Illinois or anyone else from the Big Ten.
Right, right.
And as long as you could have someone creating this schedule where there would be these teams from other divisions rotating in, I think that would help maintain interest.
Yeah, I think your point about having one centralized authority coordinating and overseeing the whole thing is a strong one. It might actually be, when you look at this at the macro level, that might be the most appealing aspect of it, that we finally have a, quote, league office overseeing the sport, and you've got one body which is uniquely charged with overseeing, you know, the LOL integrity and marketability of the product.
Well, that is what we were supposed to see from the NCAA, and we obviously do not, okay?
Well, and the NCAA has all kinds of other responsibilities, though. This would be exclusively football, and I think that's important.
Right, but the NC, if you wanted to talk about an authority, an overall authority, it would have been the NCAA, but it's not been the case. They are not the ones with the power. We know who the ones are with the power, Chris, and we're going to talk about them when we come back. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. It's quarter number three. We are talking about the Super League, a group called College Sports Tomorrow, made up of a group of about 20 folks, including college presidents, an NFL executive, and a few other folks. They put together this idea for the Super League, where it would be one big league for college football. Chris, the inherent problem with this that they are not going to get around is you have people who are in charge of what's going on with college football who are not involved with this. You alluded to it before. The Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, they're not even talking to this group. And why should they, right?
Well, and not to mention the major television networks, like, which are, you know, hand in glove with the two power conferences now in the Big Ten and the SEC. But another point that the article made, which I think is an important one, is that representatives of schools that are even in the group that you could consider to be on the outs, like some of the Big 12 and ACC in particular presidents, where it starts to get really thorny there, where the ACC and the SEC are both exclusively aligned with ESPN, and it's very clear who the favored son is there, right? But there's still this desire not to tug on Superman's cape. So there apparently have been decision makers, university presidents, and others at Big 12 and ACC schools who have backed off commitments to have discussions with this group explicitly because they don't want to antagonize their media partners. Especially now, as things have become very fraught in the ACC, with Clemson and Florida State kind of fighting both with their own conference and by extension then ESPN over who owns their media rights and how much it might cost them to reclaim those.
And that is going to get even more thorny as we go along. But if we have what you didn't mention too, if I'm the Southeast Conference commissioner or the Big Ten commissioner, why would I want to meet with these folks when their goal is essentially to obsolete me?
Right, right. Why would the CEO of McDonald's meet with Burger King, Hardee's, and Long John Silver's, you know?
Yeah, hey, guys.
By the way, please, nobody, like, correct me about what parent companies own which one of those brands. They might all belong to the same company. I don't know, and I don't care in this context.
Well, for what it's, I don't think they do, but the point is still there. It's a great analogy. McDonald's, they're the why? Why would they say, hey, let's split revenues with these guys? Now, but what I think to me, it's pretty obvious, and I think you feel the same way. There's no way in the world the folks at the Big Ten or the Southeast Conference are going to say, yeah, sure, let's go do this, and you guys take over my job, essentially. But, you know, it's not going to happen. But what might we have the basis, the ideas here, the foundation, by just having this group put this kind of idea out there in the public forum, that someone will reach the point where at the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, they say, hey, maybe there's something there we could work with. But the real key to all this is, there's this huge amount of money that's being paid to the Big Ten, huge amount of money being paid to the Southeast Conference, and much smaller amounts of money going to the ACC and the Big 12. The question is, Chris, by organizing this and putting it under one umbrella, is there any chance that there's actually more money out there to do it that way?
I don't know enough to say definitively or even with confidence, no, there's not, but I doubt it, to be honest with you, because I think if the money was there, it would be there right now. We would be seeing indications that it is. I understand one of the key selling points from the perspective of CFT, the group that's proposing this, is that you have all this additional inventory that can be provided to the television networks. Well, I think from the perspective of the cable stations and network providers, especially in the fractured, you know, narrow casting media environment we have now, all that additional inventory isn't really worth anything. It's just junk inventory. So you're really not selling me anything when you're saying, oh, but you could have a, you know, how many more like Baylor Pitt games would you be able to carry if we use this system? You know, that's just not anything that from a monetary perspective is appealing to the broadcast partners as they exist today. And in some ways, it might even be more onerous because then, you know, there are production costs and they have to make sure that they've got crews and cameras and coverage out for all of those games. I don't know that the selling point of, oh, more inventory is the plus that some inside this group seem to think that it is. And as you and I have discussed before, I know we talked about your idea about, aligning the different teams and getting more of the traditional, what we've thought of as Power Five programs involved. I think the obstacle always comes down to, just like there's not as much money to pay players in college football as the general public thinks, even though the Big Ten's getting a lot of money, it's probably not going to get as much in its next television deal it signs in 2031. And there is not as much money, media money, for college football writ large as some people believe that there is. They're just, you know, it's we've kind of come to the end of that gravy train.
Well, to kind of shift to the gym plan, where I use round numbers to make my math easy, Chris. And of course, if you're a regular listener of the show, you know I've proposed paying the players $100,000 a piece. If all 85 scholarship players would choose to accept that, your cost is a total of $8.5 million per year. That's not trivial. But when you start to see how much income is coming in, it kind of is trivial. I mean, mm-hmm. The coaching staff alone at Penn State, James Franklin alone makes that much. And if you combine his coaching staff, they probably make twice that. And the players are the product. Now, with that said, if you do this on a percentage basis and the next contract is smaller, their take would be smaller. That 10% or that, you know, 10,000 per 8.5 million or 100,000 per 8.5 million total, if you calculate that using, say, television revenue and even, you know, the amount of money they're getting just for the playoffs, let alone the regular season. So I just feel like I have to defend my plan. But the and of course,
and
the other
part. I was talking less, Jim, about the paying the players. I'm talking more about just the sheer bulk number of teams, the volume of teams.
I hit my mute button and didn't unmute myself, Chris.
Oh, okay.
That was
that was
our problem there. What I was saying is the I don't know how much of it you missed, but in paying the players, I don't think it's a significant amount when you look at how much increased revenue they're getting from television. The question becomes for this a new model is, could you find more money and how do you find it? The Southeast Conference brought in Texas and Oklahoma because they brought in more revenue, right? There'll be more good games and more people watching Texas and Oklahoma. Same thing for the Big Ten when they brought in USC and UCLA, and even bringing in Oregon and Washington, Fox came in and said they would cover the price of that. The question becomes, is there
Those are two really good programs too, Jim. You know, Oregon's played for a national championship in the last 25 years. Washington's won a national championship in our lifetimes, and they had to take a haircut to join the Big Ten.
Yes, they did. But there was still more money going out because there was going to be more interesting games. My question is, if you've got, would it make a difference if the Big Ten plays 9 conference games, the Southeast Conference plays 8? If you had all of them play 9, 10, 11 games against comparable Power 5 talent, would that still be garbage inventory, or would there be enough there to sell to make it worthwhile that there'd be more TV money coming?
Yeah, again, I'm not going to definitively say no. It's just the reason I'm so skeptical is that there does not appear to be movement in that direction. And I think if that market existed and people believed that that value was there, we would see some indication from that in just the way all of the realignment has played out over the last, you know, whatever, 2, 3, or even 10, 20 years. So, I'm very doubtful about that. And another potential stumbling block I see in this plan that's mentioned in the article is that unlike the current conference media rights setups where everyone in the Big Ten or everyone in the SEC is equal and gets an equal share of the conference's media right deals, they want to try to tier this, I guess, as a way of enticing the power players to the table, where they give the example of, say, Alabama and Notre Dame are going to get a larger slice of the pie than some of the other participants. Well, okay, great. If I'm SMU or I'm Cal or Texas Tech, I'm perfectly happy to just get anything, which is going to be a better deal than what I would get otherwise. And Alabama and Notre Dame can take whatever they want. But where's the cutoff? You can see very quickly, right, Jim, the bloody battles that could be fought in that system over who deserves to consider themselves a blue blood who gets a premium share and who belongs down in steerage with the hoi polloi. And are there tiers to that? And again, like if you're Purdue or Indiana, you're like, no way, no way on God's green earth. Cause right now I'm Rutgers. I'm stealing money, you know, and there's no way in the world I'm signing off on this.
And that is going to be the root of the problem. If I don't even within sharing within the conferences in the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference, you're right. Rutgers, Indiana, Purdue, hey, we don't want any change, but I don't think the Ohio States and the Alabamas, it's one thing I'll share with my 12, 14 brethren in my conference. I'm not sure I want to share with 70 teams. That creates a whole other level of issues. All right, Chris, we've got one more quarter to go. There's a couple more things to talk about with this. Specifically, Chris, moving forward, you're going to have to reach the point where you pay the players, but how do you negotiate how you do that? unless you have everybody under one umbrella. We will talk about that when we come back for quarter number four, so stay tuned. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Chris. I'm Jim. Chris, we're talking about this potential Super League, which both you and I agree can never happen. You've got a, I'll call it an outsider group called College Sports Tomorrow. And until they have the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, Fox, and ESPN involved, nothing's going to happen. Okay. If you told me there were representatives from those four groups in this conversation, maybe, but it's not the case. So it's not going to happen. But it's worth investigating some of these ideas that they have. Now, one of the things they do talk about, which I think the game has to get to, which is paying the players, that means you have a, you'll need a union of players so that you can negotiate with them, is that the ability to have one entity negotiate with players across the board.
Yeah.
So to me, that may be the most critical thing here, because that's the one way to avoid antitrust suits going on.
Correct. And you, yes, there's going to be a need for that in the near future. And I do think from the perspective of the schools, they are in all likelihood going to wield the upper hand in those negotiations in the same way that the owners do in professional sports negotiations, right? I think, you know, this is just to digress a little bit here, Jim. I've been thinking about this a lot, and I, you know, I'm no expert in, you know, labor law or negotiations or any of that, but I've watched plenty of labor standoffs in pro sports over my lifetime. And the strategy of ownership is always the same, right? It's to look and say, look, guys, this is billionaires versus millionaires. And most of the millionaires are the clustered at the top among the players. The best players are making the most money, but the majority, they're going either earning the league minimum or earning enough that because of their lifestyle or you name it, they're living paycheck to paycheck. And so over a period of time, our ability to starve them out gives us leverage. Well, I see kind of the same dynamic in general terms when it's going to come down to players negotiating against schools. And we saw a little bit of a taste of it in the rights negotiations for the new EA Sports college football game. You know, you're talking about 15,000 eligible players who were offered $600 and a free copy of the game. Now, to a small number of the players, they viewed that as an insult. Like, oh, you're only going to give me $600. You're only going to give me a free video game. But the number of guys who could realistically make that claim versus the number of guys all over the country who are like, whoa, whoa, hey, that's $600 more than I was going to make in NIL money and I get a free video game. Like, where do I sign? And that's the majority of your votes in a labor union, right? There are going to be way more players who will be thrilled to get $600 and angry at the haves who are already getting everything that those guys dream of, holding up their access to the $600. And that's the wedge, I think, presumably, that a negotiating entity working on behalf of the schools could drive between the minority and the majority of a college football players union.
You're right. But remember what they're also negotiating against, which is the players receiving zero right now from the schools. Now, you know, I put out as a plan, and I keep repeating it, $100,000 because the math is easy.
Sure.
Well, almost as easy would be $50,000. Cut that in half. And I still suspect the vast majority of players, just in, like in the example you gave when talking about the video game, the vast majority of players would say, hey, I'll take that $50,000. My future is probably as a backup right guard for the rest of my career. Yeah. And if over the next 4 years I can make $50,000 per and have room and board taken care of, that's a nice little nest egg to start my life with. So I think that they can settle down some of this, the controversy and the issues they have. I consider it a relatively small price to pay. And the question becomes, is there a way to get there? If we can't get there with this outside group, Chris, this College Sports Tomorrow, could we get there with the powers that be? Can the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference sit in the same room and say, hey, we'll need to create something here. Maybe it will involve the Florida States and the Clemsons. Maybe it won't. But just between our two entities, we essentially run this thing anyway.
Yeah.
You know, what could we do to create this? And is there anything in this College Sports Tomorrow proposal that could make those guys say, yeah, let's start there. Let's work this into our model.
Yeah, I think we identified several of the strengths of it. There are murmurs that those conversations are going on already between the Big Ten and the SEC. And I think ultimately they're just going to have to. The answer to your question is yes, it's a necessity. And going back to my point about, you know, a players union negotiating with a single unified entity on behalf of all the schools involved. And again, who knows? It might not even be schools till we're done. These could be private corporations that are aligned with the universities or 501c3s. Who knows? But I think another thing that argues for a pared down number of teams involved is that it is much easier for like-minded schools with similar pools of resources available on one side of the negotiation and players who represent like a greater commonality of interests, I think, in the top 35 or 40 programs in college football versus the top 70 or 80. So that's another reason why I think it's just going to be very, very difficult to move to this professional model that we're shifting to with the same number of schools that we have always thought about as being part of like Division I in our heads when you think about college football.
Well, does that have to be the ultimate result of this, Chris? You and I've been talking a lot about these teams. They need the have-nots to make sure I go 8-4 and get a new contract as a coach and as an athletic director. I could call my team a success. But is the cold, harsh reality back to what you were talking about with the inventory of games? It's a lot easier to have a good inventory if I'm dealing with the top 40 teams than if I'm dealing with the top 70 teams.
And if you only have 40 teams, yeah, there are going to be more losses. But again, like we just end up looking more like the NFL, right? Where the whole conception we have of the college football regular season, which I think you and I probably both agree is a shame to see sunsetting as we go further and further away from 2019. But this whole idea that every game counts and you can't lose a game, you lose one or two games and you're completely out of the championship chase, I think that's just going to end up getting set to the wayside. And it's going to be about winning enough games to make it into the playoffs and ideally to be well positioned in the exact same way that it is in the NFL.
And, you know, is there going to be a point, though, if you have 40 teams right now, if you're the 30th best team in the country, like I said, you're 8-4 or 7-5, and you good chance you get a new contract as a coach and an AD or a whole athletic department, you could call it a success. But if you only have 40 teams, will all of a sudden, you know, Iowa, that's one of the haves, would become one of the have-nots in this smaller group of teams where there's only the 40 best teams in the country.
Well, and yeah, I think you just illustrated my point that it would be a knife fight for between Iowa and several other schools about whether or not they are classified as a have or not by whatever objective measure we want to use. But right now, guess what? They are, because they opened one of the golden tickets back in, you know, whatever the 1940s or whatever Iowa joined the Big Ten. It was just, guys, who was inside the fence when they decided to change college football? And I look at it and I say, oh, Michigan, okay, sure, yeah, Ohio State, yep, that makes sense, Penn State, Wisconsin, Michigan State, okay, sure, oh, USC, UCLA, wait, now, hold on a second, Northwestern, Rutgers, Purdue, what are you guys doing here? It doesn't matter. It's like whoever was holding the golden ticket at the right moment. So congrats to Maryland and Rutgers that not only got their golden tickets, but got them based on an even at the time entirely outdated measure of how many cable boxes they brought to the table in their media markets.
I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. Yeah, that's the golden ticket you snuck into the Big Ten or the Southeast Conference.
Yeah, but I mean, like Mississippi State, Arkansas, do you think these schools would be, if we were just like, okay, who are the 40 we got to get? I'm not even going to pick on Vanderbilt. But like, for sure, like nobody is looking at it and saying like, oh man, we got to make sure we got Arkansas in there. Like, oh man, make sure you get Mississippi State. We can't do this without Kentucky football, guys.
But all those schools will tell you, hey, remember when, you know, Mississippi State, Dak Prescott, right? We were a top five. Rutgers was a top five team when they were in the Big East 1 year. I think they got as high as number three for a while.
Yeah, so, don't give me this Tim Couch stuff, guys. It's like, do you have the ratings or do you not?
Well, that it's going to be the bottom line is always going to be the bottom line, which is how it works financially. And right now, Southeast Conference and ESPN, Big Ten and Fox, those are the power players in all of this, Chris. And nothing will happen unless it means more money for those four entities.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, they have announced that there are plans for a streaming service which is going to carry live sports content from both ESPN and Fox. So the players at the top of the totem pole have figured out that there are economies that will allow them to make more money. It's like when, you know, Disney and Sony figured out they could make more money by sharing Spider-Man than by keeping him out of the MCU.
Well, and then that's how it's going to work. Southeast Conference, Big Ten, get together, figure out how you can make more money. That's how we're going to see change.
The only guarantee is
yes, exactly. Sorry, Pitt. Sorry, a lot of other teams. If you're stuck in the ACC or the Big 12, or hey, you go the way of the Pac-12. All right, Chris, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.